is Harvest Place.
Hi, guys. welcome to Natural Disasters. I'm Adam.
I'm Marissa.
And we're starting off with a little bit of a harvest report, because this time of year is the most exciting time of year.
It's the most exciting time of the year.
And everyone around, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, is getting ready to harvest, or has harvested, or is starting to harvest, or is preparing to harvest.
I think all that meant mostly the same thing.
Yeah, it did. So we thought it would be fun just to give a little bit of, we've been reaching out to our colleagues around the globe to find out sort of how they think this 2018 vintage is looking. It's not going to go into much detail, very broad strokes, but we just thought, you know, why not? Why not get a little excitement going?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was what Adam's been working on, so he's going to take it from here, because yeah. I haven't really been talking to anyone except for Montage.
MIA.
Yeah.
In
VT.
VT.
Yeah, I didn't even have any time to IG, so...
No IGs, MIA, and VT.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us what's been going on, Adam.
So first I'm going to start with California, because that's where we're based. And I've reached out to a bunch of people as far south as, let's call it Baja. I consider it part of all California. Mm-hmm. Alta California is what I believe we are. And then as far north as Mendocino. And it seems like everybody sort of is saying the same thing. Pretty much, except for there's a few people up north who've had a little bit of smoke taint. But other than that, everybody's saying words like traditional or classic or... hold on, what was the other one that I got? Hold on. God, people have a lot of...
I can tell you that they did start harvest in Vermont. Well, Adam's figuring that out, but I don't
normal.
Know... Normal. Oh, that's the word that they've been using?
Normal. I got, like, it's the first normal vintage, which what they mean by that is I got a lot of people saying that it's been a long time, especially I know people have only been making wine maybe, you know, a decade or less, and so they've been experiencing either drought vintages or extreme heat waves.
So do they even know what normal is?
Well, this is what they've been told. A lot. Everything is in quotes that they've sent me, normal, traditional, classic, because they're not 100% sure really what that means. But
Yeah. Basically
what they're saying is that there aren't these extreme heat wave peaks. The fruit's hanging for a really long time, ripening very evenly, and they're going to be picking as late as October, some of them, which
Wow. A
couple people I've talked to had never picked as late as October, have always picked maybe like first, second, third week of September. So people are very excited to work with this fruit, at least in California. And then I got some word in parts of Europe. I think it was a little drier, a little bit more of a drought, and stuff seems a little bit riper this year. I'm making, again, this is broad strokes. I'm sure there's regions that have experienced different things, but broad stroke of the vintage in California looks really, really, people are very excited. Europe, they're also very excited, but get ready for another ripe vintage, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Cool.
So today we are drinking the Fable Farm Fermentory. Fable Farm Fermentory. You know, I love alliterations, but that one's a bit of a mouthful when I'm...
And this is a wine that was...
Yes, so this
from
is,
Vermont, where you just were.
This is from Vermont. Yeah, I just visited these great dudes at Fable Farm Fermentory. Sorry, my voice is just so fucked up from yelling at people. No, I'm just kidding. Chris and Johnny, we're hanging out with them. So we're drinking the Venus. And I love this... So I had this while I was there, and I loved just under it says Venus. It says a blend of other than standard sparkling apple and apple grape wines with an asterisk. And then if you turn it over, it says has the asterisk, and it says please pardon this wording as it is a result of a back and forth with the TTB.
Oh, that's so funny.
I know. I love that it's there.
The TTB, for people who don't know, is a governing body that you, when you make wine in the United States, you have to submit your label to them to get approval before you can release it. And so when they're saying there's a back and forth, they mean that the TTB said no to a lot of stuff.
So because I think, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in Vermont in terms of the mixing of wine and cider, which they've started using the term Venus cider, which Krista says that they heard. Krista Scruggs, who has the winemaker of Zaffa, who I was out there profiling, she was saying that she actually heard it on our podcast with Quinn.
Woo-woo.
So that's great. I think Quinn came up with it, but whatever. Venus cider, I'm into it. Let's support the Venus cider.
Yeah, and there seems to be a movement of it that's happening.
Totally.
I don't see it so much in California as much as I see it as an East Coast thing.
Well, they got a lot of apples over
there. Yeah, cider makers and winemakers are becoming almost the same. They live in the same world and realm.
Absolutely. So the Fable guys, they're out of Barnard, Vermont, which is like central Vermont, from what I can gather from my whirlwind trip while I was there. This wine is a it's a dry kind of rosé grape apple wine. It has 2 years on it. It's steeped in skins and pulp and seeds. I'm kind of just basically I'm just this is all on the back of the thing. But anyways, they got some of the grapes from Lagardista, which is basically the premier natural wine and wine out of Vermont in general. Deirdre's Wines, and I'm pretty sure it says the grape Marc, M-A-R-C. I'm pretty sure they mean Marquette, which is a grape in Vermont. It's a red grape.
Well, it's one of the Marquette of the siblings, you know, David and...
the David Marquettes of the world, yeah. I actually tried to make a joke about that while I was there, and everyone was like, please
stop. That's
not
funny. Yeah. That's why we get along, Marissa, because we both have a horrible sense of humor.
We have terrible sense of humor. So they blended 4 barrels of grape... well, maybe it's not. I don't know. Grape Marc-infused cider with 2 barrels of cider that underwent a maceration of its own. You know what? Here's the deal. It's a sparkling, delicious wine that... What's cool, though, is with how they got it to sparkle is they added honey. So it was like,
oh, that's the dosage.
Method. Yeah, they dosage it with honey.
That's
though.
Dope. That's so Vermont.
I know, it's so Vermont.
I mean, maybe maple syrup would have been even more Vermont.
Yeah,
but
they're very into honey in Vermont.
Oh, yeah. That seems so very. They use Ben and Jerry's as the dosage.
Actually, yeah, they were just like, ooh, just a little Cherry Garcia here and a little Americone Dream into the La Crescent, and there we go. But, anyways. I know I probably should know what this is, but I tried a billion things while I was there, and I didn't have an. I
would say it's if I was blinded hypothetically, this I wouldn't know what to make of it. I wouldn't know if this is like a skin contact white, or if this was a low. I don't know if I'd go cider. I don't know, and I love that about it.
Yeah, me too. It's so interesting because it has beautiful acidity on it, which from my experience now that I've got to taste a lot of Vermont wines, most of them have a ton of acidity. So there's a lot of acidity on this. But the cider is like it really balances out with just a little bit of RS. Again, it could definitely, if you were blinded on it, I mean, even from the look of it, they call it a rosé, but it's definitely on the tangerine, the deep tangerine orangey side of things. It tastes delicious. I've been kind of obsessed with the Fable ciders and
it's
cider
doing
wines.
That sour candy thing that I love, yeah. Which is like that my tongue is going like.
Yeah. Also, I'm
going
to be.
That's a disgusting sound on the radio. You know, my tongue's going.
Oh, okay, gross.
No, it's like it's doing that. I love it. Like I feel like I want to, like I just want to keep drinking it.
Yeah. Which is a problem when you go visit them because they pour you so much stuff and you can't stop.
I'm getting the honey now.
You're getting the honey.
I'm
getting
the honey.
I will be honest, guys. Like my tongue is completely acid washed. Like there's no taste buds left on it really. But I do know that I love this after like, you know, being in Vermont and drinking their very acidic wines for a week. I love this stuff. I've been really into, they have a one called Fluxian Ancestral, I believe, that was really great that I posted about not that long ago, as well as another one I didn't post about but is great that's been in California called Fox and the Grapes. And they're really, really great cider wine, guys.
And I know that they're available. I don't want people, they are available, at least I know for a fact, at Psychic Wines in LA.
Yes.
I would be assumed that there'd be other places throughout the country.
Domain LA has them as well.
And maybe possibly Ordinaire.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
They're part of Percy Selection, so you can kind of guess that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very prevalent in Vermont. You could order it everywhere.
It's great.
It's really,
really
great.
So let's talk about Vermont.
Yeah, so, oh man, guys. Wow. Fucking.
First, can I just say, so you went out there because you are penning a piece about sort of an individual out there, and
yes,
also a movement out there.
Yes, I'm not gonna say a movement so much, but I am. I went out to profile winemaker Krista Scruggs of Zaffa, who also does Venice ciders. And Krista, being Krista, I mean, Krista did something that I haven't had a lot of winemakers do, in the sense that she was very intentional on. Like, I didn't even get to... I'd had her wines multiple times before this at Brumaire, and then also she actually met me in D.C. for me to try her profile back in March, or her portfolio, excuse me. Like I said, I really am running off of fumes to this point. But Krista set it up to where, like, we barely had time to revisit her wines while I was there and while I'm writing a piece about her, because she's so... she really wanted me to experience the entire community of Vermont and everything that they have to offer. And quite frankly, it's fucking insane what's happening in Vermont. Like, I cannot believe the community there. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, I showed up and last Wednesday, and Crystal like picked me up, and you know, she took me for the next 5 days. She took me to go, you know.
Yeah, she was your tour guide.
She was my tour guide, yeah, and she took me all over and introduced me to everyone. You know, from you know winemakers to chefs to farmers to you know cider makers to you know women that make juices and jam people and also like
Wait, did you meet Ben and Jerry?
No, I did not meet Ben and Jerry. That was the one thing that Crystal left off the tour, and we got in a fight about it. I mean, it's actually a sore subject. Like, let's not bring it up. I'm like, oh, you.
I was actually gonna say, like, do Vermonters hate that? Like, they're known for Ben and Jerry to some degree.
I don't know because a lot of people on Instagram are like, make sure you go to Ben and Jerry's. It's really worth the visit. But then when I said that there, they were like, oh my god. So I don't
know. That's hilarious.
But
it's like their equivalent of what's it called in New York.
Times Square.
Times Square.
Yeah. They're like, ooh, make sure to go to the M&M factory thing. And you're like, what? Make sure to go Guy Fieri's spot, which I would have been like, yeah. Flavortown, take me. I'm always down to go there.
I need some donkey sauce.
Yeah. So, and just to give a, you know, just to kind of give a rundown of some of the things I did. Like, so for example, I went to this new spot called Highball Social, where they're doing, Sass Stewart runs the spot. And it's with her, also her distillery, Stonecutter. And what they're doing is so cool because they're taking like a highball, like it's called Highball Social. Highballs are a cocktail of just, you know, a liquor base, an alcohol base, whatever that is, in any soda.
A vodka soda is a highball.
A Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
Any of those are.
They're two ingredients.
Two ingredients. But what she's doing is she figured out a way to carbonate the gin and whiskey so that they can come out of the spout with her homemade juices at the same time. So it's like, and so
it gives she's basically kegging highballs.
Yeah, exactly.
And then putting them on tap.
She's like kegging the liquor and kegging the juice separately, and then they like come together. I'm pretty sure is how it works. It doesn't matter. What the difference is that like the fact that she's like actually carbonating the liquor, like the gin and whiskey, like has them come out with like this like almost champagne texture.
Yeah.
It's like really light, beady, but like they're just very different than any other cocktail I'd ever had. And it's totally badass. And Highball Social just opened like a week ago. So
everything's on draft.
Not everything, but
things on draft.
Yeah. So the two highballs that they do like and that changes regularly are on draft.
That sounds delicious
and
smart. It's
fucking delicious, yeah. And then they do, you know, the cocktails change all the time, and it's all about, like, giving history to cocktails, and it's fucking awesome. And then I had this incredible dinner with Kara, she has, like, a middle, maybe maiden name, I'm not sure that I can't pronounce, but Kara Tobin of Honey Road, which was a James Beard Award-nominated restaurant, and Kara was nominated as well this year. We had this big dinner with Shaxbury, and Shaxbury's an awesome cider out of Vermont, and we're homies with them. And, you know, all these people, like, came together for this huge dinner and, like, just...
For you.
Well, we don't need to put that part in.
In celebration of Marissa Ross.
No, it was in celebration of what's going to be called the soda plant.
Right, no. They were showing you who they were.
Yes, and so so Shaxbury and Zoffa and, you know, Brio Coffee Roasters and all these awesome Vermont... artisan peeps are making cool shit all in this one thing that's called the Soda Plant in Burlington. That's awesome. Got to go to Lincoln Peak, which was one of the first wineries in Vermont. I got to taste this grape called Marquette. Had never heard of this Marquette before. Because in California, really the only wines we get from Vermont are like Deirdre Hinkins of
That's only relatively in the last few years. It's not like we've been inundated with Vermont wines for the last 20 years. I mean, it's just,
no.
I'd say California in general, we don't get a huge influx of, you know, almost every state makes wine and we don't get a lot of them.
We don't get most of it.
Because we make so much of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's amazing to see what other states are doing because this is so different than what's happening in California. And I love, it's like in some ways, it's like being in France and drinking Italian wine. Like it seems almost that different.
Well, no, I was going to say that, so this trip that I was on, you know, it was the first domestic trip I've been on where I felt like I was on a Europe trip.
Yeah.
Like to where like you're just going and like, you know, so I visited Lincoln Peak and then also Ipitus, I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right, maybe not, Ipitus wines in Shelburne and, you know, these winemakers that, you know, these grapes, you know, I got to visit La Gargista and, you know, they're in this awesome dude named Todd, and I definitely cannot pronounce his last name. I will make sure to put it in the you know, the detailing of the pod. But these people are making wines out of grapes that I'd never heard of or seen before. You know, like Marquette and La Crescent, which I hope everyone was making fun of me the whole time because I kept wanting to be like, La Crescent? And they're like, no, you don't have to like spice it up. And I'm like, I can't pronounce anything correctly no matter where I am.
It's like, no, just an American accent. You're like, Le Croissant.
Exactly. It's like,
and then when you're in France, you're like, La Crescent.
Crescent. And I visited Fable and like Canamac Farmers and stayed at Hotel Vermont and like had this awesome, we had this great tasting at Daedalus Bar. I got to chug a 1998 Fleury from Matra.
Yeah.
I mean, serious business happening in Vermont in terms of like all these. And what's crazy is like all these people are coming together and supporting one another in this way that is just is unparalleled in my, like, maybe it's because I'm from Southern California and like most people that live in Los Angeles are like mostly out for themselves. But it was a sense of community I really haven't experienced for so many people to come out in such big ways. You know, like everyone was like donating so much of their time and product and resources and
that. And I know that you were saying that, like, I know you were there and you're writing a piece, but did you feel that it was less like, it's almost like this is just who they are. This is just innately in them to be like this. It wasn't like they were like,
no, I don't think that I don't think they were putting it on for me.
Right.
I think that they really were just I think this is just how they are. And it's hard because I want to like give so much thanks to Vermont, but then I'm writing this piece, so I don't want to give too much of what I'm doing away. But I was completely blown away by the community and also like the quality of and like the talent that's coming out of Vermont right now, to the point where I was sort of like, do I move to Vermont? Like, what am I doing in California? Like, everything is like lush and green and beautiful here because...
You were there during an optimal time of year. Why don't you go there in January and decide if you want to move to Vermont?
Well, that's the thing. We all know I'd die.
Yeah.
Everyone knows I would die. I'm very thin with tiny, brittle.
I was going to say your BMI, is that what it is? Body something.
Yeah.
Is you would freeze to death.
I think I would, yeah.
You would walk outside and you would just freeze.
Yeah.
And they would find you in the spring when the snow defrosted and...
It would be like The Shining, which I guess would be a good way for me to go.
Yeah.
It would be pretty on par. Something interesting that was said to me while I was there. I'm learning about these new grapes, like Marquette and La Crescent and Saint Croix.
I think it's pronounced Le Croissant.
Le Croissant, according to Marissa Ross in Vermont, yeah. And Saint Croix and like all these crazy grapes I just never heard of. Some of them I can't even. Or Brianna, have you heard of this grape?
Is that the White Witch?
I don't know.
Is that Fleetwood Mac? I was making Fleetwood.
I think that's, isn't that
Rihanna?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I was making a rap. Like, never mind.
That wasn't good. We're really off today. I obviously can't travel. 1 week off and we're just down.
Yeah. It's like, oh fuck.
No, but there was this great Brianna that like I never tasted before. And everyone's like, Brianna is like this, people have a lot of different feelings about Brianna. And I was like, okay. And then I tasted it, and I was like, yeah, I can't figure this grape out, or this wine out. Like, do I like it? Do I not? Like, it's sort of like, I can't even explain this Brianna. It's a white wine, and it doesn't have a ton of acidity, so it feels a little flat. But you can't decide if like you like Brianna, like, or you don't like Brianna.
I feel like someone named Brianna, I would be like.
Yeah.
Like, do I like Brianna?
Yeah.
Does she spell her name with a Y or with an I?
I.
Oh, see, like, all these things to consider.
But it was weird because I was like, I don't know if I like this Brianna. But I mean, it's not that I don't like it. And then I learned a lot of new things.
Yeah.
But something very interesting to me was, so then this Todd, I'm going to spell his last name. It's Todd, and then...
Trzaskos?
It's Trzaskos.
He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He's like this... I don't know what his deal is. That he wrote a book called Wines of Vermont and a history of pioneer fermentation that I haven't got to start yet. But he is a home winemaker working with these varieties and doesn't sell them. He just makes them for like his little community and just, you know, he has like a wine club. I asked him if I could join it. He was basically like, no. Or he was like, the wait list is really, really long.
He's like, what's your zip code? Because I go by zip code and if it's not Vermont, you don't get any.
Exactly. And so I was like, he was like, yeah, Brianna's really foxy.
Yeah, foxy.
Well, wait, no, it's not what you think it is. Or maybe it is and you know this. Foxy is a Vermont based term that's basically like a different kind of mousiness.
Oh, really?
It's not like mouse though, but it's the same. It's so when someone when they said it was foxy, I took it as like, ooh, yeah, she's sexy.
No, I know it is grapey.
Yeah, grapey.
Yeah.
Grapey, but it's like a kind of like a flaw. They consider it like kind of a flaw.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah, foxy means grapey.
I have no idea because no one's ever said that.
Yeah. But well, because we never drink hybrids or non-vitis vinifera, and very rarely do you come across foxy flavor profiles in non-hybrids or non-vitis vinifera.
Which I guess brings us to our next point because, so, which or what brings me back to the point that I was going to make. So we're there, we're tasting these wines I've never had before. And Krista, and there's a dialogue between Krista and Todd where they basically say how refreshing and awesome it is that I'm not calling them hybrid grapes. I'm just calling them...
It's like when Kanye West talks about how whenever they mention him in an article, he's either the husband of Kim Kardashian or rapper Kanye West.
Yeah.
He can't just be Kanye West.
Yeah. So I was just, like, I would say La Crescent or La Croissant, you know, or, you know, Marquette or, you know, St. Croix, whatever, Brianna. And call them by their variety name, and they both were like, "Oh, it's so nice to have someone here that just calls them by the grape name instead of you know precursoring it with like, oh, hybrid, like this hybrid grape, you know, whatever." So I thought that could be an interesting thing to talk about because hybrids aren't, you know, it's not like a blend of two wines, you know, that's a blend.
No, yeah, exactly.
So
it's a cross between two
or more.
Or more grape varieties.
Yeah, so there's two. So there's
not varieties in the same. I think it's subspecies, right?
Yeah, it can be, but most of the time they use Vitis vinifera.
Right. I think it's Vitis vinifera, and then something else like Vitis lambrusca, or a different type.
But
of
there can be
grape
like
variety.
Two or more of all these different grape varieties coming together. So for those of you that don't,
it's like a pluot or like a. Like, I can't think of any other hybrid.
Plutonians.
No, it's like a Plutonians.
Yeah, it's like Vermont's like, these are grapes. And it's just like, Pluto's a planet.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And
that was a Rick and Morty reference.
I know. What was the guy's name? Zappy? Zipper?
I can't remember.
Anyway, no, it's you see those stone fruit where it's like a plum and an apricot blend. Or like, this is.
A tangelo.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, or like different citruses that are. This is. In theory, all of the grapes that we drink are all from the same. They're all
so like
Vitis vinifera.
Yes, and so Vitis vinifera is like Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Franc. It's all of these very like the OG
from Europe
wine like wine grapes.
Let's call them what they are. They're colonizers.
They're colonizers. They got hit with a. Phloroxia, how do you say it?
Phylloxera,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I said, dudes, I can barely talk.
No, it's true. I came in and
I'm stressed. it's a stressful time. But, so they're not, so the hybrids are, you know, they're two or more of these vinifera species. And so in Vermont is full of them. And the reason that these hybrids go so well there are because they are more pest and cold resistant. Like they actually can stand up because sort of like, I was like, oh, they're kind of like dogs. You know how like everyone wants a purebred, but like a purebred is more prone to like, for example, someone that owns a Pomeranian, you know, a Pomeranian is more prone, like a purebred Pomeranian is more prone to like respiratory problems and like heart problems and dental problems, whatever. Whereas like these hybrids are like, if you get a mutt, like if you get a dog that's like crossed with other dogs, you know, the likelihood that they're catching.
They're
genetically stronger. Yeah. So hybrids are pretty much the awesome mutts of the wine world.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. So like the colonizers came to America and they're like, we need to grow our grapes and we have to use our noble varieties. And so I know that like, Thomas Jefferson tried to turn Virginia into like he wanted to make it like the Bordeaux of.
They're still working on that.
I know they're trying, but what happened is either like it was too humid or Vermont. I'm assuming there's just different things that they're dealing with. So they blended them with local grapes that were growing in the Americas, and that's where your hybrids come in, and then they can have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of people. Look down.
Them.
Yeah, they poo-poo them. They're like, hybrid grapes are not good grapes. Like, that's trash. Like, not, those aren't real.
Which is just old world. It's just like old world colonial colonizing way of thinking in some ways.
Totally. And like, it's really interesting though, because people are still, I think, taught that if you're going up through maybe some of the, you know, classes and, and like the institutions of, you know, formal wine education, you know, these wines are still kind of, or maybe it's more old guard now at this point. I don't know. But for me, I just, you know, I was there and like when they said that, like, oh, she hasn't called them hybrid once, I didn't even think about it. Like, to me, it was just like, this is La Crescent, this is Marquette, this is St. Croix, whatever. Like, I don't, like, I'm not thinking about
it. Yeah, you don't care what fucking college they went to. You're not like, oh, are you, what is your upbringing?
Yeah, it's not like, oh, are you sure you're on the same, are we like on the same like level here? Like, it was, it's like,
right, you're never going to be like, this hybrid is good. But it's only as good. It can only be a maximum a 7.
This good, yeah.
It can never be a 10.
The way that people, and then it's like interest. It was interesting to me because it was sort of. It reminded me of, you know, kind of when people say one terroir is better than another terroir.
You know, where are you going with this?
Well, no, I'm just saying that like, why is one grape better than another grape? Like, I think that that's just,
it's almost like terroir doesn't exist.
we already know that it does.
I know,
just
but
like,
I know
these
what
are
you're
fucking
saying.
Grapes. It doesn't matter what kind of grapes they are. They're making fucking wine out of them, and it's delicious. And so I said to, you know, Todd and Krista, I was like, I hadn't even thought about it, hadn't even crossed my mind, but now that it's in my mind, like, how is a hybrid really any different than a clone, or any different than like, you know, grafting? You know, there's all these things that we.
Well, that
do.
Flavor profile that you mentioned, Foxy, has always has been. When I first got into wine very early on, one of the old school guys, like, you know, someone who'd been working in wine since probably the early 60s, one of the things that he would always say is like beginners and blah, 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 is that wine is never supposed to taste like grapes. And I always found that a little bizarre because it's in fact made from grapes.
Yeah.
But there's this sort of this old school belief or philosophy that wine is never supposed to taste grapey or foxy.
Well, what's interesting, or what's a bummer maybe, is that like in my book, for example, I say that, but that's only because I never once have encountered a foxy wine. Like, I had never I never tasted a wine that tasted like grape.
No, right, because but I think that's because the industry for so long has been working against, like, they've been trying to push away from that.
And I'm complicit in that now. My ignorance.
Well, I mean, it's growth, maybe?
It is.
I mean, I've always been that way. I mean, it still would be hard for me to taste, like, I'm trying to
work.
Well,
that's why I didn't like Brianna. I'm like, what the fuck
is
this?
If I tasted a grape that tasted like Welch's.
That's what it tasted like, though. It tastes like white Welch grape juice that's a finish on it. And you're like, what the fuck? This is weird.
I probably would have my own prejudices towards it, but I think that as a wine community, I mean, it sounds like they even had a little bit of a prejudice.
Yeah, they know what's up. Like, I was like, I don't really like it, I don't think. Like, it's like, I like it, but I don't like this Welch's grape juice quality that it leaves. And then they're like, yeah, it's foxy. And I was like, oh, I never had experienced it before in my life. But also, too, like, I tasted a lot of, like, so this Brianna that I had that tasted that way was, you know, a homemade Brianna from Todd.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, you know, it gets that way. But, you know, then I had a Lagargista, like, wine that was, I forget what the blend of it was, but it had Brianna, but you still didn't get the foxy quality in it. So, I don't know, but I'm just sort of like, I don't understand. I mean, I get it, I guess, if that's the reason that people look down on hybrids, but I tasted, like I said, I tasted so many fucking wines I can barely taste now. I you know, there's
your palate fatigue.
Yeah, my palate fatigue is so real. And palate fatigue is when you've tasted, like, basically the acid or tannin is just like burnt your taste buds off.
Yeah, you can't taste. It's like when you go to spicy food, when you have like spicy food, and after a while you're
or
just like
all the sour candy.
Yeah, exactly. I just like all I taste is nothing.
Yeah, it's just like you just get the sensation of taste instead of like the actual everything. It made me feel bad that people. It made me feel sad that people hadn't maybe been taking these wines as seriously as they should have been, because they are really so good. Like, I left that Vermont trip being like, La Crescent is like my Riesling.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone like loves Riesling for XYZ reasons. And usually it has a little bit too much RS for me or whatever. And a lot of Rieslings are more sulfured than other wines. So I'm not as much of a fan of it. But Le Crescent, for example, I was like, this wine is fucking amazing. Like, you can do so much with it. Like, I had, you know, skin contact Le Crescents. I had, you know, sparkling Le Crescents. I had, you know, I just, like, flat Le Crescents that, you know, all of them. And they were stunning. Like, just really, really awesome fucking wines. And I couldn't believe, I was like, I can't believe that I hadn't had this before.
And you can't believe, right, to some degree, that, like, there's an uphill battle, and the uphill battle starts purely because of the hybridness.
Yeah.
So, like, if you went and took these wines into a restaurant or in front of a wine bar buyer in, like, a major city like New York or San Francisco or L.A., the uphill, like, you kind of have to apologize in advance as you're like, so, or like preface, like, so, just so you know, I'm pouring you a hybrid.
Yeah.
Just because there's such a prejudice towards it, instead of just being like, hey, check out this cool wine. And I think that the wine world, I mean, that's like, I know that Noel from Beachy, like, when they first started, like, everything always had to start with, like, hey, we're from Mexico, because it was such a hard grasp for people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that that's changing for, like, regions where people are, like, being a little bit more okay with regions. But maybe that's a long road ahead for the hybrid grape.
I hope not. I mean, I sort of, like, I think, you know, I was also talking to people there, and they say it seems to matter less to younger people, which is probably, you know, like, me. Like, I just didn't care. Like, for me, it's like, yo, it's a grape that's making wine. And also, too, this foxy quality that maybe is why people look down on them. I only experienced that with one wine, like, the entire time I was there. And I had really, really incredible wine. So it was very interesting to me to hear that there's this, you know, that there is such a stigma. And also, too, it is, though, we, like, as much as, you know, we live in Los Angeles and we aren't isolated in a lot of ways, we are isolated in the sense that we don't get, you know, like, a lot of people ask if I've had wines from Virginia or wines from Arizona. It's like, dude.
Yeah, or Michigan or wherever.
Yeah, and I'm like, we don't get those.
No, there's no market.
There's no market. And also, like, the one Lagartista wine that we get, like, maybe once a year is super allocated and, like, $65 a bottle. And, like, you know, that's not Deirdre's fault. You know, like, she's trying to keep her business alive, and, like, I don't have any problem with that. But also, when there's only, like, 6 bottles available in LA and they're that much money, like, it's hard to get your hands on them to even become, you know, versed in these things.
And it's hard for those wines to escape novelty almost. It's hard for those wines to just be like, if they're readily available, you're not so much like, oh my God, have you tried a Vermont wine? You're just like, oh, have you had Lagartista? That wine's great.
Yeah.
There's the novelty factor of it. And I think that, you know, there needs to be sort of like a, we all need to, as a community, need to be, like, so much more open-minded to things, like, and not labeling them as, like, a novelty, and not not being like, hey, try this wacky Vermont. It's not wacky because it's Vermont. That, no. In no way makes it wacky.
No, they're serious
or
lines.
Unique or it. I mean, they're unique, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I know, and that was what was so interesting about being there is, like, it was rediscovering wine in this way, because it was all new things, you know, that I had never heard of before and I never tasted before. And, you know, I tasted so much that it blew my fucking tongue out, which is a good sign. And it was very interesting. And they aren't like, it is something that we need to take more seriously. But I think if we take into consideration, you know, like, skin contact or, you know, the fact that we are breaking out of typicity, particularly in the natural wine world, you know, just because it's a Syrah doesn't mean it's going to taste like quote unquote Syrah or, like, you know, whatever. I think because we, especially the natural wine community, is so much more accepting of things that are outside of typicity, outside of, like, regionable characteristics, and caring so much about, like, you know, this terroir over that terroir and things like that. I think that hybrids will become more incorporated into the general landscape over the next 10 years. Because if you even, like, let's look at, like, the fact that I'm going out there to write about Krista, you know, if, like, other winemakers start making wine in Vermont on, you know, on a scale like that, like Deirdre does at Lagardista, you know, we will be, I think we'll be getting more of those. And I think the community will incorporate those and they'll be integrated and there won't have to be these conversations.
Well, there's also this weird thing that is just sort of dawning on me right now, actually, which is so...
You have a lot of epiphanies on the podcast.
I mean, that's why I pod.
Renamed. Time out. It's now called Adam's Epiphanies. Featuring Marissa Ayres.
No, it's this idea. So there's sort of a conversation. It's not sort of. There's absolutely a conversation in California about how young winemakers, what the future looks like for young winemakers, because obviously land in California is punitively expensive. And so it's become this problem where winemakers sort of have this fear, young winemakers, that they'll never own their own land. They'll never be able to farm. They'll never be able to do this thing. But there's no conversation being had that I've heard about the possibility of moving into regions in California that maybe potentially didn't exist or never thought of because we only use Vitis vinifera. There is what if potentially we brought there was more hybrids, they brought hybrids, hybrids started coming to California, and then all of a sudden regions either higher altitude or whatever it is, you started planting grapes, or people actually were like, you know what? Maybe I can go to these other states.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I feel like with the hybrid thing, like a lot of them are meant to be like, you know, they're cold resistant. You know,
yeah.
Like they already, I think that they already produce enough sugar and stuff that maybe being here in California, it might be problematic in terms of like.
Well, not if you're high enough elevation. We have places here that are so high in elevation.
That's true.
But also, the
thing is like that, yes, Vermont, I feel like. And Krista and I...
Why aren't winemakers moving to Vermont
that's the thing.
To own land and to buy
grapes? Well, I don't think everyone can still own land. I think land is still pretty expensive in terms of like...
Texas, or
anywhere, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing that I had a conversation...
South Dakota, that's my place. I'm making wine.
That's... Okay. I won't be visiting, but have fun. My spare bedroom's still open anytime. Well, that's what I was talking to Chris of Lincoln Peak, who's been in Vermont making wine for, you know, 40-something years. And then Krista, because Krista was like, oh, it's going to be like 50 years until Vermont like kind of blows up as a wine scene. And I was like, oh, no way. It's going to be like 10 years because people can't afford to stay in California. And like also, too, in terms of like climate, you know, Vermont still has a pretty steady climate. Like they still, I mean, granted they have their own problems, but like, you know, it still gets cold enough there to have these a lot of acidity in their wines. And I think that specifically Vermont is going to get exponentially bigger over the next 10 years because of its climate.
And could become a major player in the world as a wine community.
In terms of domestic wine, fuck yeah. Like, I mean, like, if you had to ask me now, like, today where I'd go make wine, I'd go to Vermont. Like, if I had to stay domestic, I would 100% go to Vermont.
That's amazing.
I would 1,000% hands down go to Vermont. And even though it snows there, I'd make it work. But luckily, I'm not trying to do that. But, you know, if I was, like...
If it was like, hey, Marissa, here's money. Go make a wine. Pick any region, anywhere in the United States.
Oh, I'd pick Vermont. No questions asked.
It's because of the Ben & Jerry's. I know it.
It's because I really, really want to...
Because you loved jam bands.
No, I really want to...
Pogo stick.
No, why... dosaging.
Yeah. Oh, you want to dosage with honey?
I want to dosage with it.
With Ben & Jerry's, with Cherry Garcia.
Really off. That was a callback.
It's all right. I get it now.
I'm going to dosage with strawberry cheesecake from Ben & Jerry's.
On a completely off topic, did you see anybody playing devil sticks in Vermont? I feel like that's a thing that they would do.
I did not see that, but that sounds like something they might do. I don't know what that even is.
Devil sticks are where people have, it's the three stick game. There's like a stick in each hand and then they juggle one stick.
I didn't go to like Burning Man. Like,
I
went
feel
to
like
Vermont.
That's, I feel like that's like, I imagine for some reason in my mind, just like.
Everyone's just doing it.
There's just people like street performers on like doing devil sticks.
Maybe. No, I didn't see that.
Any ocarinas? Do you recognize any of the ocarinas? You're like, I made that ocarina.
No, there was no ocarinas that I saw. But I was also like, you know, Vermont is so spread out right now because, you know, there's not a ton of people making wine there. So, you know, it takes a long time to get everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that may have, and it's still a lot like California and other places where, you know, like Lagardista, for example, has a, you know, it's Barnard. Like their farm is in Barnard and they have vines there, but then they also have, you know, a vineyard in Virginis, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Were you in Burlington? Is that where you were based?
I was based in Burlington, yes. Yeah. And then there's an awesome island.
Did you visit the Coat Factory?
No. Krista tried to drag me there, and I was like, listen.
To a Burlington Coat Factory?
No, I'm teasing. Oh. There was none of that. No. We did not. We did not go to Ben & Jerry's, and we did not go to the Coat Factory. Like, we did not go to this. I was like, listen, my husband, Ben, eats enough Ben & Jerry's for me to know what's up.
Yeah.
I used to have to go to Burlington Coat Factory with my mom.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need it. So, although that was very gracious of everyone to offer to take me to Ben & Jerry's and the Burlington Coat Factory. It was great. I really think that if someone, like, honestly, I don't know how, like, if you want really, really good food and wine and cider and beer, because, like, also, like, they have, like, the best brewer. I forget his name because I wasn't there drinking his shit. But, like, they have incredible, like, all that shit's there. It's fucking bananas. It's bananas. I was like, if it was only temperate and nice, I'd already be moving there.
I know you're going to Portland, I believe, is coming up soon.
Yes.
Is there an aspect of it?
I didn't mean that against Portland. I just meant that I've been traveling nonstop for the last 2 weeks, and I'm, yeah.
Is there, because a lot, I feel like Portland 5 years ago, 4 years ago, sort of, it's changed a lot, but is Vermont, does it have that sort of Portland-y vibe, that early?
You mean clean and white?
I guess. Yes. Yeah.
It's very clean and white.
I meant more like the Portland culinarily had a very, they were just very culinarily driven.
I think that Burlington and Vermont have a really strong focus on food. They're so genuinely invested in, you know, sourcing everything. It's very Portland in that way. It's like a Portlandia episode where they're just like, they know exactly where everything came from. But I dig that too, because I'm like, all right, if, you know, I had a wonderful conversation with another wine writer named Melissa, I forget her last name, but Melissa was like, you know, the government's not going to save us, you know, agencies aren't going to save us, like, nothing's going to save us except ourselves in these times. And so then to be there where, you know, Carl, who made me filet mignon from his own ranch for lunch, who told me, like,
from his own, like, stock of
from his cattle.
Wow.
Like, he only sells at the farmer's market, really, in Vermont. They keep all their beef at grocery store prices because they believe that the children aren't able to eat well enough there. And I was like, that's so awesome, because his wife's, you know, was a school teacher, and, you know, they have all these, you know, it's so true, you know, that everything does begin on a local level.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to, you know, like I said, like, be at these farmers' house and then being like, oh, you know, and so, you know, that the flowers, we traded, you know, X amount of beef for all of these flowers from our neighbor, and, like, knew exactly where the flowers came from. Or, like, oh, you know, these string beans are from so-and-so, and we bartered with them. And it's like this, I was like, what is this? This feels like some sort of, you know, medieval video game.
See, that's sort of funny that you went there. I was like, it sounds like
Oregon Trail or something.
I was gonna say, like, it's like The Walking Dead, but if it was more utopian, we're like, we no longer have money, so we barter and trade.
Yeah, well, it's like they just can't make enough money, you know, because also too in Vermont, there's like a whole epidemic with the farmers there, and, like, you know, dairy's dying. Like, I mean, there's so much shit. There's a lot of shit going down in Vermont.
Yeah,
but it's amazing. I don't know. I think that everyone should go visit. Like, I had a really, really good time.
Do you fly into Burlington?
Yeah, you can fly into Burlington. It's awesome because it's like Burbank, but even better. And those of you who have been to the Burbank airport, you know that.
For people who don't live in major markets, most airports, obviously, but LAX is quite possibly
the worst,
one of the most disastrous airports.
Chicago O'Hare is definitely the fucking worst, though. I mean, sorry, O'Hare, but you're the worst. And then, like,
but all of them, SFO is awful. They're all awful.
But Burbank is very, very tiny, and Burlington is like, oh, there's like 100. It's like 100 feet, and it's like that's the whole terminal.
Yeah,
like, that's it. So
it's like you get off the plane directly. Dude. You don't go through, like, one of those things.
Listen,
it's just
up.
Like a staircase up into the
yes.
plane.
Yes, I literally got there at 5:01.
Yeah.
I got through security because my flight was boarding at 5:20. I got through security and went to the bathroom leisurely. And then I was still there at 5:19, like at my
gate. And
boarded my plane. It was great.
Through stairs. Go out onto the runway and then, like, go up the stairs?
No. It just, like, literally just go upstairs. But then after that, I had a layover at O'Hare while there was a Packers game and the Bears. And that was
Nightmare. Sounds
a
like
nightmare. A total nightmare because I don't care about football and I was very tired.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Vermont's great. You guys should all go visit. And Burlington's a good, like, Burlington's great. Like, the water's right there.
I'm excited. I'm excited to read your piece. I'm excited to.
Thank you. It's going to be a lot different than this. It's going to be just about Krista Scruggs, who's, like I said, she does Zaffa Wines, Z-A-F-A. And they're not the new, there's her new, you're not going to be able to try it until next year because her current vintage was really, really small and sold out. But she's a total badass doing really cool things. And I don't know, I'm really excited about what they're doing in Vermont and going back to, like, what we're drinking. And because Krista's wines are also vinicidors, you know, and, like, everything that they're doing to combine, like, apples and grapes and finding these new kind of products is just really awesome and inspiring. And there's no, like, it's not like a competition. Like, they're genuinely like, oh, hey, like, let's help each other
they
out.
They truly believe that saying of, like, a rising tide raises all ships.
They
and they're actually, like, they're not just saying it to each other. They're actually
no,
doing
there's, like,
it.
Actionable shit that I witnessed happening where I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of people that show up for each other and support each other and, like, donate for one another and, you know, barter with one another was really, truly inspiring. My piece will be not about that, though, so it's good to be able to talk about. I mean, it will allude to that, but it's good to be able to talk about those things.
Her piece is mostly going to be about Ben & Jerry's.
Entirely about Ben & Jerry's. Yep, totally.
Well, this is awesome, and I'm so excited to drink this, and I'm personally just really excited to
go to Vermont. You're like, I'm going to go to Vermont.
I don't know. Part of me is like going to be like, I'm going to go home and tell Kate that maybe we should go hang out in Vermont for a little bit.
I think you might want to. It's really fucking awesome.
What I was going to say is I'm really excited that there's like a, I don't want to say a player, but like I love hearing about successful communities doing things that are so positive.
Absolutely.
And I love, like, I'm so excited for the growth and, like, I'm so excited to go into the local wine shops or to go to restaurants and, like, start seeing Krista's wines and Dietrich's wines and other wines and ciders and just stuff.
Or becoming, just being able to taste wines that you didn't even know existed.
Yeah, no, it's just,
you know,
it's
just
exciting.
Like, grape varieties that you didn't even know, like, that you never have tasted before is really exciting because it just, and also goes to prove that, like, you'll never know everything about wine. Like, wine is constantly changing. It's constantly evolving, you know?
Yeah, like, I know for a fact that when I did WSET, if we talked about Vermont, it was barely because...
Yeah. And then they were like, fuck that shit, don't drink it,
yeah,
it's foxy.
Literally, it was just like...
No.
Because it's from a British viewpoint, because California, literally when I took everything, they're like, California... Too hot to grow grapes. And that was the fucking whole chapter, I feel
like.
So, like, all of these, like, the Master Somms and all these people that are doing these things, does that mean that they don't even consider... The hybrids are not even...
I don't think so, though, because, like...
They don't even talk about it, or they talk about it. I would like any Master Somm who's listening, because I know we probably have dozens.
Oh, tons of them. They just love us.
If you want to comment or hit me up with an email or reply or something, I would love to know, because I'm very curious, how much detail...
Is in it now?
Yeah. Do you go into? Do you talk about it? What is the opinion of the court system? What do they...
Yeah.
Do they say that these are world-class wines, or do they refer to them as foxy and say that they'll never achieve greatness?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what is the opinion of the court? That sounds so fucking medieval. It's so...
It is.
The opinion of the court
is... That's because it is.
It sounds so colonial, so colonizer. I'm curious. I really am, like, because that right there is impeding so many people's point of view on something immediately. Could you imagine if there was some sort of certification program for musicians, and in that certification program for musicians, they were like, hip hop. It'll never be classical music, so don't even bother.
Yeah, it's really weird, especially as someone that, like, went in. I mean, obviously my background's a bit unorthodox, and so I wasn't going in with any preconceived notions.
Yeah.
Like, my thing was like, oh, they're hybrids, and I don't get them, like, in California.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And so, you know, I hope more people think about it that way. Like, they're grapes. They make wine out of them. Like, give them a
chance.
And
the wine's fucking good.
And the wine's fucking good. I mean, I'm not going to speak for the entirety of all Vermont wines, but I mean, the wine.
You hear here first, people. Marissa Ross says all Vermont wines are better than California's.
Wow. Just throwing me under.
No, I know, but it's fair to say that they can all pull up to the same table. And they
I will say I had some of the most exciting wines I've had all year in Vermont on this trip.
Fuck yeah.
And that's awesome. And not all of them were, you know, I mean, the Vinicider thing is really fucking cool. And but again, this goes to show, like, you don't know everything that's going to happen or what's possible in wine. And I think the most important thing to do is, like, go into those things with an open mind, because the chance of you trying something great is great. You know, like, you might taste something awesome, and if you don't love what you taste, at least you're learning something new. Like, we shouldn't go into any bottle with, like, a preconceived notion of, like, you know, based on its region or variety of what it's going to be, or that it's good or bad or whatever, because you just don't know, and you never know. And wine is constantly evolving. It's
you
constantly
can equate
changing.
That to the way we should treat every human being to some degree.
Well, yeah, just treat everyone fairly.
And
wait for them to be an asshole before you just decide that they're an asshole.
Yeah, don't
wait for a wine to be bad before deciding it's bad.
Don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge a
bottle. Unless it's my book, in which
then
case.
Then it's the best.
It's the best. Actually, they're like, I don't know.
Don't judge a wine by its label, and don't, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. No. That's no.
Don't judge a grape by its parents.
Don't judge a grape by its region. Or don't, I don't know. It just don't judge.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, okay. Yeah, we're getting real preachy. We're
don't
we're
judge, all right? Don't judge me. Don't judge Adam. Don't judge this podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't
cool.
forget to.
I'm excited. Thank you. Welcome home. I know you're leaving
thank
again
you.
Soon.
I'm leaving
but
again, like, in like less than 48 hours. So,
cool.
Yeah. But enjoy this. I'll promise I'll be more on point and hopefully sounding better by then.
All right. Well, bye
all
everybody.
All right. Bye everyone.